Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half-full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Weinrich.
Howdy, everybody.
How are things going, Dave?
Good. Getting into the home stretch at the end of the year here. And
unbelievably.
I think it's a slide.
Oh, for sure. Unbelievably, 2018 is sort of almost done.
Thank God.
It's been a long year.
It's been a long year. Tense.
Intense. Some ups and some downs, but you know, it's almost in the books, I have to say. You know, we've certainly drunk our share of good stuff.
But we have
eaten some good meals, written some good stories.
It's all the stuff that keeps us sane.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Sane-ish.
It really seems to be the year of, like, reboots, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you have all of these, you know, bars, you know, sequels coming out. Death & Co., one of our favorite bars in New York, opens a new one in Denver, which is sort of long-awaited. Nomad goes first to Los Angeles, and then they just opened up in Las Vegas in October in the old Monte Carlo casino, which is now, I think, MGM Park, so which is very exciting.
It's like you never left home when you're over there.
Exactly. Yeah. I guess maybe that's part of Vegas. Years ago, I wrote a story about how Vegas had become, you know, like New York. Like, I think the first paragraph was about how, sort of Gotham magazine years ago, it was about how sort of the perfect New York day, you know, you could go to shop at Barney's, you know, have, you know, lunch at, I think it's one of the, you know, one of the Second Avenue Deli.
Now you can, like,
go to the Guggenheim.
You can have a couple cocktails at at Death & Company and then go to Ray's.
Right, exactly.
For the lemon chicken.
Exactly. Or the Nomad. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or the Nomad. Yeah.
Or the Freehand is now the hotel is Hostel Hotel in Miami. I mean, it's a tiny, intimate space, and now there's a much bigger one in New York, Los Angeles. I mean, it's
The people who've been running these great craft cocktail bars are finally, I think, capitalized enough that they can push their brands.
What's really interesting about a lot of these bars is that they're hotel bars, right? I mean, that's
even here in New York, which is crazy. New York in the 19th century was all about the hotel bars.
Right.
Most of the great bars were in hotels, and then in the 20th century that went away last half.
Yeah.
And now it's coming back. Like a lot of the bars are in hotels.
Yeah, or you get a few of those last holdouts, like the King Cole Room, the St. Regis.
Exactly.
But there's sort of few and far between.
They used to be lonely.
Yeah.
And now they've got a lot of friends.
Yeah.
A lot of attractive young friends.
And even some of the older ones have disappeared. The Waldorf Astoria is closed for, I don't know if we'll ever
reopen. What they're doing there.
Multi-year renovation, slicing it up. And, you know, a lot of the old bars, the one at the Plaza, obviously Trader Vic's is long gone. We talked about that.
Yeah, and the Oak Bar. The Oak Bar is I mean, I think the Oak Room is still there in some capacity, but I haven't been in a while.
I mean, the Algonquin still has a bar and the Iroquois, but it's not.
Those places aren't the ones that are getting the energy right now.
There's a lot of
new hotels downtown that have aggressive bar programs and well curated. Yeah.
And
the Nomad Bar was the standard setter for that.
And even in that hotel, which is like, it's in the upper 20s, kind of in an area that was sort of a no man's zone.
Yeah, when they moved in, it was mostly a place to buy wholesale sandals
and flip flops, wigs, no name perfume, backpacks, but it was one of those
buttons.
Sort of weird triangle between, you know, Madison Square Park, 34th Street and
the, that's one of the oldest parts of the city and one of the few parts to retain its physical integrity. Yeah. Now that it's picked up again, they're tearing down buildings and it drives me nuts.
The success of the Nomad, I think, and next door, obviously, the Ace as well have really changed that neighborhood. And, but both of those bars, I mean, even the Nomad has expanded over time. You know, now they have three bars inside, four bars. So if anything, they've run out of room inside.
Yeah, it's never not full.
Right. And now, of course, they got so busy. Now they're in all these different cities. And
I think they're sending some of their customers who are waiting online. You'll get in quicker if you go to Vegas.
It's true. We'll call you in a couple of days. And we'll come back from there. Well, and it's also one of our old favorites, the Dead Rabbit, down at the tip of Manhattan. Obviously, sort of a tumultuous year for them.
Yeah, they had a huge fire. And, it's one of the oldest buildings in the city. This little row house that was made out of wood and pretty inflammable.
So, right. And it's next to or two doors down from Francis Tavern, right?
Exactly.
Which is, George Washington ate and maybe slept there. I think some of his teeth are there. His
dentures. That's where he left his dentures.
Yeah, there are a few couple sets of dentures there.
He thought they were in his other pants, but they were in fact at Francis Tavern.
That's when you've made it, when you can leave dentures at different bars, around the country. Yeah. Just in case. But the Dead Rabbit, as they like to say, born in hurricane, I think, forged in fire now. So, which is certainly true.
It's true.
They opened, their opening was delayed by Sandy, which is obviously a giant hurricane that hit New York in 2012. And
you put the whole area underwater.
Oh, yeah. And now the Dead Rabbits, as we speak, is sort of perfecting their expansion.
Yeah, they were getting ready to expand, and then they caught on fire.
I don't think it took them too offline, like the new part. Yeah. But like, I know they've. I was talking to Jillian Voss, who's their head bartender, and I think now general manager, about it last week, and she was saying how, like, the bar room on the first floor will be connected, so it'll just be a giant bar room, which
it needs.
Yeah, and I think that, if anything, that was my biggest complaint about the Dead Rabbit was just that it was so packed.
It's, the perils of success in a place like New York is there are just a lot of people here.
Yeah.
And you're always going to run up against that any place that's very successful is going to be very crowded.
And I said, I think maybe for a second, like, you'll be able to breathe in there, but I think it'll fill up to the same
level. It's like when you build freeways and suddenly, we've got a new freeway that's going to reduce congestion.
Right.
No, it just brings in more cars. Right. Everybody's used to congestion, so they just fill it up.
Well, hopefully we'll get in right before it gets so bad.
I'm looking forward to that.
And then, 2018, I think the avalanche of cocktail and spirits books has only picked up speed in the last 12 months.
I think I've got a pile of them that's literally ready for an avalanche that came out just this year. I've got no place left to put them.
If, God forbid, you don't hear from Dave or I, look underneath the piles of books.
The new cocktail books. Yeah,
we may be underneath at the bottom of those.
Over the last two or three years, it's been incredible. This year is a real drumbeat.
And some of them are heavy and have sharp corners. So this is like,
some of them are very large.
A real threat to our health. If these piles should ever tip over. So all joking aside, we've seen, a whole bunch of books, every possible topic that I can think of. But some great ones, Dead Rabbit has a new one. The Death & Co. folks have a sequel, The Cocktail Codex.
Which is a very interesting book. Tries to reduce everything to just a few basic recipes with variations, which is, that's useful. Yeah.
I have not seen the Aviary book.
The Aviary book is gorgeous. Yeah. It's a hell of a book. It's not an everyday drinking book, but it's certainly interesting to page through it and get ideas of how they do things, which is really unique.
And,
it's science, technology, it's kitchen technology brought to cocktails. There's all kinds of interesting stuff.
I'm not sure I have enough equipment at home to make some of their recipes, but
I don't. Yeah. I don't have a gas chromatograph
right.
or a large centrifuge chamber right. in my house, unfortunately. I mean, the gas chromatograph, I keep trying, but my wife Karen just puts her foot down. She says, no.
Yeah, seven-figure investment or yeah, six-figure now.
Yeah,
maybe.
We need that room.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, my daughter sleeps there.
You don't want to play CSI cocktails? No. All right, cool.
Well, I would like to, but it's just not an option, unfortunately.
We did an episode this summer, which feels both a million years ago and also yesterday with Jeffrey Morgenthaler from Portland. From it runs two bars in the Ace Hotel, Pepe Le Moco.
He had a book out this year, too.
Yeah, he has a book, The Drinking Distills. It's always fun talking with Jeffrey. He is a lot of opinions, which I love. All of them very strong opinions.
Oh, yeah. I'm always happy to argue with Jeffrey.
He's a friendly person to argue with. Oh, for sure.
He's happy to argue, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, so am I. So there we go.
So it was a good one. Our fellow columnist and old buddy Gary Regan did a reboot of his Joy of Mixology.
Wow, it was fabulous. I think it's a big thing.
About 15 years, which is I didn't even realize that. In some ways, I thought his Joy of Mixology had come out even earlier than '03.
It seems like a different era.
Yeah, doesn't it?
You know, there were really only a couple cocktail books back in 2000, 2005.
Yeah.
That period, there were very few.
Oh, I mean, it literally would fit on one bookshelf. I remember going to Barnes & Noble, the big one on like 83rd Street and Broadway, Manhattan, go up to the second floor, and they would have one shelf of sad books. You know, that most of them had been in print for years, decades. Yeah. They just, you know.
Yeah, like all like lists of cocktail recipes that nobody's ever going to drink.
Right, or heard of at that time.
Yeah.
And a few obscure, you know, biographies.
And then there was Dale DeGroff's Craft of the Cocktail.
That kind of changed.
There was Gary Regan's book. There was Ted Hayes' Vintage Cocktails. Yeah. There was the Cocktail book.
Well, those were the tip of the new iceberg.
Yeah. But now their great-grandchildren are out in profusion.
Yeah. And I saw news, I guess, that Dale's working on, like, maybe like a revision of one of
he's working on a second edition of Craft of the Cocktail, which is great.
Long well needed. So.
Yeah, and it was one of the foundational texts.
Oh, for sure, for all
of everything. Yeah,
I remember going to the party for it.
I think it was at a bar at
Rockefeller Center. Yep. There was like a fancy health club with like a fancy kind of healthy-ish bar restaurant attached to it.
And there were Gary Regan mixing drinks, Angus
Audrey
Winchester, Audrey Saunders, all kinds
Pete
of good
Wells
people.
Wells was there. New York Times food critic.
Well, time moves on. And, you know, this year moves on.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's been from my side of the beat, it's been an interesting year. I wrote a bunch of cocktail stories about the usual. I covered toddy. I've got a list. The burnt fuselage of Paris drink from the 20s. A whole long deep dive into how when the martini came.
Right.
It's how it took over.
Yeah.
That took a lot of time. That was very detailed. Now we can do things like that.
Right.
We didn't used to be able to. In 2018, it's even easier than it was every year
before. What I loved
before.
About that story was that, you know, it was all the facts laid out, right?
Yeah, no interpretation, really.
Right, and it's just sort of, you know, there's all these people, you know, who have different, you know, motives and opinions about the martini's history. And here it was in black and white or whatever.
Here's
color.
What we know.
Right.
You know, that's all it was, is here's what we know. Here's every record I've been able to find on the martini as it became known.
Right. And I feel like a lot of people read that and were cursing madly.
Yeah. Well, there goes my theory.
Right. Exactly. Like, oh, but that's what we've been telling you for years. Yeah. Which was kind of a fun one.
Yeah. We talked about, the Michelada and the Paloma, a couple recent Mexican drinks that I love and tried to look into the history of those. That's very hard. But interesting. I think my favorite discovery of the year was I was in Sicily this summer, and in Palermo I had this thing called Acqua Cusamu, which is just ice, a glass of ice water with this anisette that they make down there. I don't normally drink anisette.
Right.
You know, it's like the Sambuca after dinner. I'm not a huge fan, or in the coffee. But this stuff was 120 proof and bone dry, and you just sprinkle a little bit of it on top of the ice water, and it becomes like this glass, milky white glass of just pure refreshment. And, you know, in hot weather, we need that kind of thing now.
Oh, for
because
sure.
Because New York City keeps getting hotter.
Yeah.
Every year.
I don't think that's going to change anytime
soon. No. The number of 90-degree days just goes up and up. And so, that was good. Revisited some things. A drink I've really liked, the modern cocktail, as it's called, which with Scotch whiskey and sloe gin, which just sounds nuts.
Yeah.
But I found it in a 1905 drink book. But it turns out one of the people I talked to on Twitter is a cocktail researcher, and he found the inventor of it, which I had never known.
Very cool.
And this guy, John Haas of Bradford, Pennsylvania. There you go.
Yeah.
So that's the great cocktail, the best drink ever invented in Bradford, Pennsylvania.
That we know of so far.
That we know of so far, exactly. Right. We're waiting, you know, the jury's still out. We're waiting for final results.
Yeah.
I mean, there may be others, but that one was very good.
Yeah, for
sure. So those are some of the things I revisited. Talked about drinking in Italy and how it's different structurally from drinking over here, and drinking in San Francisco and its long history. That was interesting. We talked about bad drinks.
I love that story.
Yeah.
Dr. Dave's Guide to Bad Drinks. A Field Guide to Bad Drinks.
Yeah, Field Guide to Bad Drinks. I mean, everybody spends all their time talking about good drinks, but how do you know the good ones unless you know the bad ones? There are a lot of bad drinks now. The more something gets spread out, you know, it's easier
to... And I like that story because it kind of explained why bad drinks occur. And you know, obviously these are hard-won lessons, you know, that... From years of making mistakes.
And it's also from years of hanging out in cocktail bars and watching. I've made the mistakes myself when inventing drinks, and I've seen other people make them. And it's, you know, it's obvious stuff like making it too fancy, going after all the trendy ingredients and putting them all together in one glass. So there's mezcal, sherry, chamomile-infused vermouth.
How could that not work?
Shiso leaf in this drink? What could go wrong? Would that be a problem?
Modern classic.
28 different flavors.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You know, so we talked about that.
2018 flavors.
Yeah, talked about the prehistory of rum.
Yeah.
Which is a deep dig into... ancient history, really, the people who run the rum business really don't want you talking about.
Probably not.
because it turns out not invented in the Caribbean.
Probably no.
Maybe 2,000 years old.
Right. You know.
Yeah. Whatever. Interesting though. We talked about bad 70s drinks.
Yeah.
So we're not the only ones to make bad cocktails. These are all the drinks that had ice cream as an ingredient. Oof. Yeah, a lot of ice cream drinks, a lot of drinks with only liqueur as the base.
Yeah.
So it's like you take some Tia Maria coffee liqueur and then you add vanilla ice cream to it. And then you put some grenadine in there, too.
Maybe OJ.
Add some OJ. Yeah, sure. And then you top it up with 7-Up after running it through the blender.
I was going to say definitely blender.
Definitely blender drink, you know. And then a lot of maraschino cherries on top. Oh,
for sure.
And a banana.
Yeah.
And the top bars in America were making things like that. So it's crazy.
It goes with kind of the yacht rock of the 70s and that sort of. Yeah. Smooth jazz that sort of fills the void between
life and music. Exactly. I mean, it's not really music.
No.
It's like what I call a music-like polymer.
Right. Well, but same thing with the drinks. They're not
They're not real drinks.
They're sort of drinks, but, you know, it's the drink that you'd be served in an elevator going to your dentist.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know.
I mean, they're for people who really don't like to drink, you know, and they want to be out with their friends. And but it's like, I don't want it to taste like whiskey or gin. Right. You know, why would I want that?
I want it to taste like coffee ice cream.
Yeah. I want it to taste like when I was a kid.
Well, it's when I was a kid, I remember thinking that all of the drinks that I equated them to like the like sodas, you know,
yeah.
like
so yeah, exactly.
like, the dark ones would taste like root beer or yep. cola, or you know, the clearer ones would be like 7-Up or ginger ale, and
that's about it though.
Yeah, yeah, I remember tasting them and being like, ah, this does not taste like no. soda. Ugh.
No, they
who ever want to drink that stuff. Ugh.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, my mom, who was from New England, when I was sick or it was really cold, like if the power went out in the winter, I'd get hot buttered rum.
Oh, yeah.
Made in the fireplace with a red hot poker jammed into a mug wow. with about like a quarter inch of rum.
All right.
And about, you know, 4-5 inches of water and some sugar and a pat of butter.
Yeah.
And she always used Meyer's rum.
Right.
Because dark and funky, that was what you want for that.
Oh, yeah.
And so for me, that's my favorite childhood taste. Right.
And that explains a lot about Dave, I think, why he does what he does. I could be wrong. It was either last December or this year that you did your flaming sugar lump punch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't remember if it was – and that was last year. There's some brutally cold days. So, yeah. I mean, I did not try that one at home, I have to say, like – lighting the sugar brick on fire, but
yeah, but well, it's very fun.
It almost came to that. That's how cold it was, but
yeah, I mean, you know, sugar brick, anything else flammable in the house, really, you can just light it up.
Better make this somebody else's house.
Yeah, yeah.
Bite yourself over, and make it.
I've had problems with that in the past. Right. I used some tongs once that had kind of a hollow channel structure.
Oh yeah,
and they fed the flaming, melting sugar out onto the table at my friend's house. Yeah, that was interesting.
You never know.
You never know.
It's always good stories. Good stories.
And we had also at the beginning of the year, end of last year, we had Boilo or Krupnikas, the Lithuanian / Pennsylvania winter warmer. Those I like those hot drinks in the winter.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, they're cool.
Weirdly, like you wrote about it, and then like I kept hearing about, like, I, you know, for something so obscure, like I think it really captured
the imagination. It was in the zeitgeist.
Drinks people, like, you know, at least 5 people we know, you know, were
oh, that's funny.
We're obsessed with it last winter. I don't know exactly sure why.
It's like a bottled liqueur, and I still got a bottle of it. So I will be firing that up.
I don't know, was it last year or the year before? We definitely did a story about all aged eggnog. And I know that you.
I've tried it. I kept a bottle for a year, and it worked fine. I've had it as old as 3 years.
Yeah.
And it works fine.
Yeah.
You just got to make sure to put a lot of booze in it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. You know? And keep it in the fridge.
Keep it in the fridge. Booze the hell out of it and keep it in the fridge.
Yeah,
high proof.
No need to throw away the leftovers if you make it from scratch.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the carton supermarket kind, but the
no, the real stuff.
The real stuff.
With, yeah.
Because not actually, it's labor intensive, but not that complicated.
Really. Yeah, and it's delicious. It makes all the difference. Yeah. You know, it's not so heavy, sweet, cartoony tasting.
No,
it's,
for sure.
It's right.
We also, 2018, we lost your favorite dive bar, Hank's, closed. Near your house, which I know is
it's on the verge of it anyway right now. Let me talk about Hank's for a second. Yeah. Hank's, the ceiling's maybe 9 feet high tops, maybe eight. It could be between 7 and 8.
Right.
It's painted black, the inside, the whole thing.
Right.
Covered with graffiti and stickers. The bar itself is at least 100 years old.
Yeah.
And I've been living around the corner from it since 1986. Which is a very long time ago when it was called the Dore for Doris and Ray, and who were the owners. And it was an Mohawk ironworkers bar because they lived in the neighborhood. That was their neighborhood. And I moved in. It was still all rooming houses in my neighborhood. Now it's all single family occupancy. You know, it's got very fancy.
And the Mohawks were ironworkers because they could go high up, right? And they weren't afraid of heights.
Like, it turns out they were afraid of heights like any normal person, but it paid really well and they were brave.
wasn't the whole, like the whole legend was.
Yeah, that's what they said. But it turns out they weren't stupid. They were just like, you know, we're brave and we can do this work and it pays really well.
All right. Right, fair enough.
So
put that legend to rest.
Yeah, So, they had a whole culture of doing all the iron work on the skyscrapers.
Oh, yeah, and the bridges and stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff. This bar has been there forever, and now the corner's being torn down for development. So it's such a shame. You know, and it's a bar that's always – it used to be open at 8 a.m.
Right.
And it was always – had people in there. It was not always a happy place. Right. But it was always a community.
Yeah.
And when it's gone, that's the end of old Brooklyn in my part of Brooklyn anyway.
For sure. I mean, there were a few other ones, but I don't think, like, the Brooklyn Inn or
Brooklyn
like,
Inn's a little fancier.
But that's, I was going to say, it's. Yeah. I mean, it's there in body only, but the spirit, you know, that kind of community.
Well, it's got its own community, but it's a little more bourgeois.
Yeah.
Hank's is really low to the ground, as they say. You know, it's, those people are not fancy. I mean, there's Montero's is still there. Yeah. It's also down by the waterfront is kind of like Hank's a little. It's a couple steps up. I brought somebody into Hank's once my wife and I, people we knew who were a little fancier than us. And it was a couple, and the woman put her handkerchief down on the stool before she sat on it.
Right.
So
there's a lot.
There's a lot. That's Hank's.
Yeah.
It's still a great place to drink.
Yeah.
You know, it's... really, it will be missed.
We will be gaining at least, hopefully, the rebirth of Gage and Tolner, another Brooklyn landmark, which was in downtown Brooklyn. You know,
yeah.
Really the most famous restaurant in Brooklyn.
It was the flagship of all Brooklyn restaurants. It's got the interior is landmarked.
Yeah.
It's the interior landmarked survived through being a TGIF. Hardee's or a Wendy's, a burger place, and then a nail salon since it closed. And it's still pretty much intact.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable because it's landmarked.
And our friend St. John Frizzell, St. Jin from Fort Defiance, I know is...
Yeah, one of the great modern Brooklyn bars.
Yeah, in Red Hook. And I know he's spearheading this project to hopefully bring it back and reopen it. And
I mean, the beauty of something like this, or the importance is... Brooklyn's seen a lot of gentrification, obviously, over the last two decades. A lot of people moving in, but there's no like one restaurant that you go to celebrate things.
Right.
There's no one place, you know.
Yeah.
There's nowhere you could go to have like the celebration of grandma's 80th birthday with all of her family there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a little bit fancy.
Yeah.
You know, that's elegant and local. You know, you have to. All those places are in Manhattan.
The only one that comes close is maybe the River Cafe, but
that's a little different, though.
It's literally its own.
See, I used to eat at Gage and Tolner's with my father in the 1970s and 80s, and because he worked in downtown Brooklyn, and that place was. It was steaks, chops, and seafood, and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it was a beautiful operation. It was for everybody. People of all kinds of Brooklyners were in there.
Yeah.
You know, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, everybody was in there together and enjoying the the steaks and the oysters, Rockefeller, and all that stuff.
It was the last bastion when it closed of that kind of dining, I think, for in all five boroughs, almost like that. The types of restaurant.
It was one of the few survivors of that time.
It's the type of restaurant that I remember my grandmother would talk about. Or
like Lu Chow's, which I ate at once or twice before that closed.
Or, which was on
14th Street, the great German restaurant.
Fellow columnist Mimi Sheridan, you know, often if we'll have, you know, lunch together, that's the type of thing that I'll ask her about. What was this place like? You know, what was that place like?
I mean, these were institutions for 100 years, you know, and they fell a little too early. If they'd held on a little bit, they would have made it through. But there were hard times in the 90s and in the 80s and 90s, and they died.
New Orleans, I think some of those places were able to hold on for better.
I mean, it's like Galatoire's, Gage and Tolner.
Yeah.
It's just
Antoine's.
Antoine's, an old line place.
Yeah. Arnaud's,
And those places are can be great. The team behind this, I wish them all the luck in pulling this off. I think it's going to be delicious.
Yeah, for sure.
So
for
we hope.
You know. Yeah, that's something definitely to look forward to in 2019. You know, 2018 has been definitely a strange year. Lots of
Ups and downs.
Lots of ups and downs. A couple of weeks ago, we lost our friend Dave Pickerel, who's master distiller of a number of craft whiskey.
Yeah, unique distillers. And irreplaceable yeah, man. Sure. Also, I don't think anybody knew more about distilling than Dave.
Yeah, we one of the highlights of 2018 for me. We the three of us, me and the two Daves, were shooting a video up in Vermont a couple of weeks ago. I remember we're all staying at the house up at Whistlepig and. Coming down and just the two of you guys just geeking out about early distillation and some of the funkiest distilleries you've ever seen and all the different
that
you
kind
know,
of stuff is yeah, it was I kind mean, of amazing. Dave had seen everything.
Oh, you for know? Sure.
It's yeah. It was yeah. always. I mean, I really feel his loss. I also lost my friend Tom Vaught, one of the great old style bartenders in New York. He wasn't old. He was 49 years old.
It's too soon.
And which is too soon. But he was he seemed like a character from the 1860s. You know, he was like the living embodiment of Jerry Thomas.
Yeah.
Big gruff guy with a deep voice who walked around with a swagger, and when he was behind the bar you knew it. You know, he commanded the bar. He was like the captain of a ship. It was a sinking ship, but it was a ship, goddammit. So he'll be deeply, deeply missed.
For sure. Several months ago, late May, we lost John LeMayer, who's obviously a great bartender, you know, who had sort of reinvented the Miami bar scene with his Sweet Liberty Bar, and he'd worked in New York and sort of come up from the clubs.
John was just an absolutely lovely guy and one of the just the sweet, sporty as hell. He was always up for fun and and things. But you know, not in a devilish way, kind of in a sweet way.
But still the life of a party.
Yeah, yeah.
He was one of those people who you'd learn early on not to try to keep up with or at least not to go drink with.
No. He had a high capacity. But
he had a way of making bad choices sound like the right choice at the time. Yeah. In a good way.
In a good way. Yeah. He wasn't...
Extra bottle of champagne? Sure, why not?
He never, like, twisted your arm into anything.
No, that's what I mean. It seemed
reasonable. But at the same time, like, the last time I saw him, I was sitting having Cuban food with him in Miami Beach, just the two of us, perfectly sober and just talking about, you know, world-type stuff. And you can't imagine a better companion. He was good in any situation.
Yeah, it amazed amazed me how many people spoke to him, like on a daily basis or a weekly basis. Like,
he was much loved. Popular.
I mean, like, just like, you know, such a way of, you know, being the center of so many people's lives, you know, all over the country. And
but he had a little bit of the puppy dog, you know, in him. He was he was friendly. And just that's sweet.
Absolutely. He'll definitely be missed. And 2019, when we'll try to sort of pick up the pieces of trying to fill the void that some of these people have left and carry on their legacies. So.
Well, we know there'll be more cocktails and
absolutely
more whiskey and more bars
and hopefully more podcasts.
So, Wayne Curtis will write a whole bunch more interesting stories,
and
Phil Green will dig into the histories of things. And
we got Lou Bryce in.
Oh my God! I can't wait to see what he comes
stuff
up with.
And you know, more stuff from all of our Half Full contributors. Yep. So looking forward to what 2019 has for us.
Well, cheers!
Cheers.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.